Hello, I'm Kate Chabot. Welcome to an extra edition of the SITREP podcast with Jamaica's Chief of Defence Staff, Rear Admiral Antoinette Weens-Gorman. She's risen through the ranks over the course of more than 30 years. After training at Britannia Royal Naval College in Dartmouth, she started out as a midshipman in the country's Coast Guard. Her route to commanding the 8,000-strong Jamaica Defence Force took her through its air wing and establishing a new command that brings in areas such as cyber. In some ways, it's an unremarkable route to the top, yet Rear Admiral Weens-Gorman is the world's only woman serving as a Chief of Defence. So how did she break through that global glass ceiling? How is she received by the men who command every other military in the world? And what can we learn from her about improving culture in Britain's armed forces? Before all that, Rear Admiral Weens-Gorman told me about the job and the force that she commands.
I have responsibility for just under 8,000 all ranks, and that comes with a significant requirement to administer to that large grouping, as well as respond to my higher authorities in government and in for defense matters in Jamaica. So I have pretty long days, and I do have a lot of military and non-military engagements just because I am a female and there's so much significant interest in that particular nuance. I think a male chief of defense staff did not garner the amount of interest and requests for other types of engagement that are not directly related to the job.
So just tell me a little bit more about the makeup of the Jamaican Defence Force and what its primary jobs are.
So we are a division-sized force, five brigades. We are responsible for national security issues, internal security, maritime law enforcement. We do national disaster management and response, search and rescue. So we are a hybrid, not a one domain type of defense of armed force. We have the air wing, the Coast Guard, or military intelligence and special forces are nested within one brigade called the Maritime Air and Cyber Command, and cyber being our very nascent capability, and lastly added to one of our roles. And so quite a wide range. Our land forces do largely internal security operations in support of the Jamaica Constabulary Force. And then, as you may as well be tracking, that we have been directed to form part of the multinational support, security support mission to Haiti, as Haiti is our closest neighbor and their challenge is there. And so a wide range. We do have a support brigade that does all our logistics and support issues with an engineering component, and that is set to grow out into an engineering brigade. So
what are the biggest challenges of your job?
I would have to say leadership in the current environment. And when I say that, I mean it is very challenging to lead such a large group of this generation, and with matters that are acute and very viral that you once had the opportunity to treat with in a controlled way, and that doesn't occur anymore. Everything is instantaneous. The way my subordinates consume information is different, and there is a challenge getting just to bridge the gap with a generational gap, I would say, in leadership.
And you've served for more than 30 years in the Jamaica Defence Force. Can you just give us a sense of what you'd done before you got this job?
I started out as a Coast Guard officer. So I did my my training in the United Kingdom as a naval at the Britannia Royal Naval College. Started out as a Coast Guard officer and went on to command the Coast Guard, with a side trip to the JDF Air Wing as second in command there. And I also established the maritime, what was then the Caribbean Maritime Training Center, where we trained operational military professional skills for the region, not just for Jamaica. When the force expanded to a division size, my job then was the Maritime Air and Cyber Commander that to pull together the Air Wing, the Coast Guard, or military intelligence or special forces and cyber into under one command. And I did that for just over a year. I established the command and then handed that over too soon for me. I really wanted, I like that level of command. It's where you're more directly, actively, you know, building something. And then I went on to be the force executive officer to General Meade, who's my predecessor. And
it's really ended up quite a career, quite a CV there you've outlined. And you've had quite a few firsts on that CV. First female officer to serve at sea, first woman to reach the rank of commander in the JDF, the first appointment of a woman to a frontline combat role in the Caribbean. What's the journey been like for you?
I think it's been a rewarding one. It just happened to have occurred in the spotlight because other women had not had the opportunity to do some of the things I did. But there were lots of women who served in the Jamaica Defense Force and in other military forces that already demonstrated that these things were possible, not just because you happen to have one gender. And I think what was really important was that I had the right opportunity. I ended up in the right place at the right time, where persons were forward-thinking enough to allow me to explore my full potential. So,
but militaries everywhere are male-dominated. What is the reaction of some people when they realise that the head of the JDF is a woman?
They're varied. Some people don't expect me to be as small as I am. I'm only 5 feet two. And in some cultures, particularly Latin cultures, it is taken by extreme surprise. But I think we are advancing, and with the advent again of the just the ease of finding information, people now know. Before social media, I would always be, oh, a woman, how did that happen? But now people are more aware, so it is less of a surprise.
Do you think you bring something different to the role because you are a woman?
Yes, I think women generally approach problems with a different pair of eyes, a different lens, and so you see things in a different way, and that allows you to approach it differently. Traditionally, also the military environment, there is a lot of testosterone, and historically it is a hierarchical kind of institution and organization, and so people expect and carry out their leadership in a way that is very dictatorial, but it doesn't have to be that way. And I think women don't necessarily have that approach. Some do, not all.
And how do you bring about change to improve the experience and representation of women in the force you lead?
So I've had a very unique position, obviously, to influence that. And that started with command of my first unit, command of my first ship. And so I was able to set the pace and tone. But more importantly, at the level of senior staff in the headquarters as force executive officer, I was directly really in charge of policy. And so as we reviewed policies, I was able to ensure that the policies that we were developing were very nuanced and enabled opportunity for women. Two policies I'm very proud of is our sexual harassment prevention policy and our gender optimization policy, which we put in place whilst I was EXO. We've also updated our maternity policy, which enabled more opportunities and inclusion for women. And it's not very gender biased to females either, because we have now added our paternity policy. And the way we have looked at our gender has been very deliberate. So we have a gender optimization policy as opposed to an equality, gender equality, which says that everything we do, whether in training, administration, and operations, it must have 25% of the minimum gender. So, for example, there are some things in the force that are dominated by females, and we now require that there must be at least 25% males involved in those particular areas and our courses that are related to those areas.
And setting policies is one thing, but cultural change is another one, and it's harder, isn't it? Have you managed to achieve that, do you think?
I would say yes. It was quite demonstrable in particularly that the unit I served in ended up having the higher percentage of women and in all areas, and that's at the Coast Guard. So we now have more female officers at the Coast Guard than anywhere else in the force, and of course we have enlisted in all the different trades and specifications there at the Coast Guard from early out. So we're well ahead, and I think that was as a direct result of my success and my influence and ability to show, just demonstrate and shift the thinking and the culture in that particular unit. And that is now spreading out into the wider force.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because that is something that challenges us here in the UK, the cultural change. What do you think the answer is? Because it's something that the UK is dealing right now and has been doing for some time.
Cultural change has to be led top down, I believe. And if the leaders, particularly where the top is dominated by men, and that is still the case in most instances, they have to be invested and they have to lead. That it has to be a top down for the cultural change to occur, especially in the military. If it's, you know, if the top is doing it and demonstrating it and it's a priority, then it filters down.
You mentioned earlier your time in the UK. How do you remember your time training here?
Cold.
Of course. You're tough. You can deal with that, can't you?
No, I was 19 years old, and that was my first time experiencing life in a temperate country. But I would have to choose the word interesting to describe it. As an international midshipman at the Britannia Royal Naval College, I was the only female in the international midshipman group, which was a vast mix of nationalities, but primarily Middle Eastern. So you can imagine the challenges that came with that. I was also the only black female in the college in total. So that also came with its own interesting experiences. But overall, I think the training was exceptional. The experience really set the stage for my career.
There is a long history connecting the UK and Jamaica. How close are your ties to the UK's armed forces in Jamaica?
The Jamaica Defence Force and UK Armed Forces remain closely intertwined, and we are very happy that one of our marquee exercises that we used to have annually, and there was a hiatus, has now been reinstated, and it is as if it never stopped. Even though it had a break of about a 10-year break, that has now started back. But in between that, we still do a lot of our training with the UK. A lot of the senior officers of the force have been trained with the UK. We now have a very unique relationship with the Royal Military Academy Sandhurst, where we are training our young officers in Jamaica in partnership with Sandhurst. And I think that is very unique for Sandhurst with any other partner in the world.
You mentioned the reinstatement of that exercise, Exercise Red Stripe, which was on pause for a number of years. Can you just tell us a bit more about that exercise?
That exercise enables a company of British soldiers to come to Jamaica and do training in specific skills that they need to train in a tropical environment, jungle training in particular, and the reciprocal exercise, the Jamaicans would have go to the UK and get an experience in operating in and embedding with a military unit in the UK. For the last two iterations of the exercise, however, we'd used the opportunity to expose the the young officers that were recently trained in on the initial officer training program with Sandhurst. But we envision that we will go back to sending a company of Jamaican soldiers to exercise with British soldiers in the near future.
So they can get cold too, hey?
Obviously, of course.
What advice would you give to women who are currently serving in the UK's armed forces or are thinking about a career in the military from your experience?
I think I would have to lean on my approach, and I did not see myself as any less, and I did not accept that I was any less, and I did not accept that there was something that I could not or should not be able to do. I accept that physically as a woman, I may have more challenges with some things physically, but that does not, what does that mean? It means that I use my brain more to achieve the objective. And just don't ever back down from what you want to do. And when you get the opportunity to do it, do not waste it. Do not take an easy road, because some women do that. And unfortunately, that does not help the cause of other women. When you get an opportunity and you try, you don't take full advantage of it and demonstrate your competence and your earning your seat at that table. And so I'm a firm believer that you get the opportunity, use it and use it very well. And remember that you are not just doing that for yourself, but all the other women who may want to do it in the future.
We've talked about your military career. Of course, everyone is much more than their job. How do you balance your career with family life?
My answer to that question has always been that a woman with a career doesn't, to balance that, you sacrifice something. So some days you're sacrificing the family, some days you're sacrificing some part of your proficiency at your job. But overall, you have to be good enough at both to ensure that, you know, in that sacrifice, when you get the opportunity to do good at work, do very well. When you get the opportunity to spend time with family, make sure it counts.
And what's next for you?
Retirement.
How long you got to go?
Well, that depends. That depends on the Defence Board. I do have the tenure of the CDS in Jamaica Defence Force is 3 years. And it's whether or not the Defence Board seeks to invite you to serve. So we'll see.
How do you want to spend that retirement when you do that?
I want to take a long break and then figure it out from there. But I do think it will be important for me to perhaps document my journey.
Rear Admiral Antoinette Weems-Dorman, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
News, discussions and analysis. This is SITREP.